Install a security solution that's perfect for you, including cloud-based security. Ascent, your local connection to the cloud. Just not that kind of cloud. To find out more, visit asetinc.com and stay local. Ascent, advanced security and electrical technology.
98.3 FM and 1340 AM KIHR and GorgeRadio.com presents the Mid-Columbia Today Show with Mark Bailey. Special thanks to our sponsors, Skyline Health and Del Carpine Automotive. Now, here's Mark Bailey.
Good morning. It is 8:04 in the morning. I'm Mark Bailey, Mid-Columbia Today. As it is a Monday, we embark on another week. It is the 6th of October. Here's what we're doing this morning. First half of the show, Eric Wilson will be with us, Hood River White Salmon Bridge Authority. And we'll talk about a trip that he and Catherine Thomas from the Bridge Commission took about the bridge to D.C., trying to keep everything on track to get construction started within a couple years. We'll talk to Eric about how that went, impressions. Kind of hard right now to give any sort of a definites about what federal money might be, but we'll find out what they learned. Second half of the program, Allison Martin, Washington Department of Natural Resources, will join us. Washington state officials here about a week ago or so went to and took a tour of the Burdoin fire area and looked at the properties that made it through it with no or limited damage, and looked at properties that were damaged and get a good idea for, you know, why buildings survived and why they didn't. And it kind of comes back to what we've talked about on this show now for a number of years with fire officials, and that is the importance of creating defensible space and room for firefighters to work on rural properties. And we'll talk to Allison about what they found. If there were any surprises, I don't think there were any surprises. I think it was what they thought it was going to be. And the importance of the preventative measures before fire does strike to help keep structures up and avoid people seeing their homes burn. So we will do that this morning on the show. But first, as we always do, let's tell you about this day as men and what it means at least to some people. This day in 1927, the era of talking pictures leapt forward with the opening of The Jazz Singer, starring Al Jolson, a feature film containing both silent and sound synchronized sequences. 1973, war erupted in the Middle East as Egypt and Syria launched a surprise attack on Israel during the Yom Kippur holiday. During a nearly three-week conflict, would become known as the Yom Kippur War. 1976, President Gerald Ford, in his second presidential debate with Democrat Jimmy Carter, asserted there was no Soviet domination of Eastern Europe. 1979, Pope John Paul II, on a week-long U.S. tour, became the first pontiff to visit the White House, where he was received by President Jimmy Carter. 1981, Egyptian President Anwar Sadat was shot to death by members of the Egyptian Islamic Jihad while reviewing a military parade. 2007, a British adventurer, Jason Lewis, completed his first human-powered circumnavigation of the globe. It was the first ever done, spanning 13 years and 46,000 miles. 2010, Phillies pitcher Roy Halladay tossed just the second postseason no-hitter in MLB history, blanking the Reds by a score of 4-0. 2014, the Supreme Court unexpectedly cleared the way for a dramatic expansion of gay marriage in the U.S. as it rejected appeals from five states seeking to preserve their bans, effectively making such marriages legal in 30 states. And in 2018, the narrowest Senate confirmation of a Supreme Court justice in nearly a century and a half, Brett Kavanaugh was confirmed by a 50-48 vote. He was sworn in hours later. Days for today, it is Child Health Day today. It is Come and Take It Day today. Now, this is a day to go out and take something you've always wanted. A goal, something like that. We're not saying just go and take something for somebody, you know, by force. We're talking just, you know, go do what you want to do. It's a day of unity today. That is in regard to a day of unity against domestic violence. It is, of course, Domestic Violence Awareness Month. It is Mad Hatter Day today. That's from Alice in Wonderland. You know, it's kind of an April Fool's Day, if you will. National Badger Day is today. Yes, as in the animal, the badger. I'm not sure we have any badgers around here. It's National Coaches Day today. We salute all the coaches out there. There are many of them. And it's World Architecture Day today. Our food today, it's Garlic Lovers Day today. I like garlic. I enjoy a good amount of it. My wife even more so. And it's National Noodle Day today. So whatever you want to make with noodles, it's a good day to do it, apparently. We salute the noodle. The versatile noodle. You can do a lot of things with it. Chicken and noodles comes right to mind. But there are others as well. But there it is for what it's worth, which may not be a whole lot. 8:10 in the morning, we'll come back and talk to Eric Wilson, Hood River White 7 Bridge Authority, right after this.
Battles aren't won solely on the field. That's a common misconception. Battles are won within, over enemies of fear, enemies of doubt. In that place where promises are kept. Promises to oneself.
This is a physical training event!
Promises to one's community.
Healthy people move debris out of their house.
Promises to one's country. In the heart of every Marine, you'll find a promise. A promise forever kept. A promise of battles won.
Hi, I'm Jackie from Hawks Ridge Assisted Living. We know this decision isn't easy. Choosing assisted living for your parents is a big step. But at Hawks Ridge, we make the transition smoother with a warm, inviting community that feels like home. From engaging social activities to personalized care, we are here to give your loved ones the quality of life they deserve. Let us help you through this journey. Visit Hawks Ridge today and see firsthand how we can be a second family for you and your parents.
Tired of boring jobs? Wake up, literally. Ground in Hood River is hiring. We're not just brewing coffee, we're fueling mornings, rescuing Mondays, and handing out happiness in a cup. Whether you're a decaf sipper, double shot dependent, or somewhere in between, we're looking for people who believe medium roast is a mood, not just a menu item. No robots, no stiff uniforms, just good vibes, good beans, and a crew that's got your back. If you're ready to caffeinate the world, apply today at Ground in Hood River.
Smiles and espresso included.
Mid-Columbia Today is a public affairs program of Bi-Coastal Media Columbia River, 98.3 FM, and 1340 AM KIHR and GorgeRadio.com. Now, back to Mark Bailey.
And we welcome you back. It's 8:12 in the morning on Mid-Columbia Today. We now welcome to the show from the Hood River White Salmon Bridge Authority and their commission, Eric Wilson. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning, Mark.
Well, thank you for
having me on.
Well, thank you for being with us. We appreciate it. And Eric, Last, I guess mid-September, somewhere in there, about 2-3 weeks ago, you and I think it was Catherine Thomas went to the went to D.C. and talked bridge with various federal officials. And how did it go?
It went really well. So, you know, maybe it would be good if we kind of recapped kind of where we are and part of the message, and then we can get into that.
Well, actually, I did that at the start of the show.
Okay.
It's part of the program. we've talked about this bridge a ton on the program. So, you know,
okay.
we basically just let people know we're really into the nailing down the big federal money at this point, aren't we?
That's correct. With the commitments from Oregon and Washington this year, that was a big reason to go back and be able to talk about that with our supporters back in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm. So, and we're talking over $500 million. I'm trying to remember the exact name of the federal program the application goes to. It's Transportation Something Something, but I know too many acronyms, and this one gets lost in me. But this is really what we used to call the big ask.
I guess you could call it that. So it's $532 million, and it's through the Federal Bridge Investment Program.
Okay.
And this is an application that we did in 2024, and we did not receive a grant, but we were ranked highly enough that we were automatically included in 2025. And those 2025 applications have not been granted or reviewed yet. So we went ahead and tried to cover our bases and submitted another request for 2026.
All right. So, and this, by the way, probably is worth pointing out, that's not unusual in these federal programs. Usually first applications, they're almost just a just get yourself on the radar type of application. It usually takes a couple, three go-rounds to get through, doesn't it?
You know, that would not surprise me. I'm not as familiar with some of these repeated applications, but that sounds about right.
I can tell you from covering these sort of things for 30 years, that is what happens. You have to kind of get on the radar first before you really become a contender, if you will, for this money. So who did you talk to back there in D.C.?
So we were able to meet with our entire Northwest delegation. So we met with Senators Murray and Cantwell from Washington, Wyden and Merkley from Oregon, and then also the representatives in the area, the Mid-Columbia Gorge, Newhouse, Glusenkamp, Perez, and Dexter. And all of those offices were able to break some time up and sit down with us so we could tell them what we've accomplished over the last year.
Mm-hmm. Over the last year, you know, one of the truisms when we talk about going after these sort of federal dollars is the further along you are yourself to being ready to put shovels in the ground, the more likely you are to get the federal government to go the final mile to get the project taken care of. What sort of things you were able to show over the last year that puts you in good position for 2026?
Well, as I mentioned, having the full commitment from Oregon and Washington was huge. We've been working on that for a while, and having both of those states come in with that full commitment over the next several bienniums was huge. We have also signed the second portion of our contract with Kiewit to get them into detailed design effort that will go on over the next 18 to 21 months. And we are also on the cusp of getting our record of decision, which is a huge step that allows us to kind of open the door and start doing all the other things that we need to do on the more detailed level in terms of right away, going ahead and acquiring the necessary right of way and permitting and that sort of thing. So those three things are huge.
How close are you to the record decision actually getting it?
I think what I'm hearing is it's imminent, and then we had a government shutdown.
Okay. Which actually brings... go ahead.
We've got verbal on most of those sign-offs, and I think it's a matter of just getting those routed around at this point. Mm-hmm. So we're trying not to get too hopeful, so we're saying sometime this fall.
Yeah.
I think a couple weeks ago I was hoping it was this month, but we'll wait and see.
Well, I was going to ask overall, this includes, you know, frankly, the process for the $500+ million. You know, right now with the government shutdown, if it ended today, I would be very surprised if that impacts this process much at all. But if this continues to linger, did the congressional representatives, their offices, indicate, you know, how, or did they know at the time you were there anyway, how long, I mean, how much could this push back all these processes, all these evaluations that take place?
That was not part of the discussion when we were there. I don't know that it was. I'm sure it was on someone's radar, but no, not part of our conversation. So,
yeah, I think one of the questions I have had through this, given what's occurring in Washington, D.C., is how much this shutdown does it impact all this, if at all? I imagine let's just say, you know, out of the blue today, it suddenly got settled. you know, I would imagine it's not that big a deal, but I think but this starts to linger. I've got to think this starts to impact the goal of getting this thing started, get some construction going in 2 years. When do we have to have a decision to be able to stay within that timeline?
We've got some runway on that, but what we're really looking to have is knowledge that the future grant is available sometime in the spring, and that keeps us on that schedule. I have to believe that we will have the record of decision complete by that time as well.
Actually, speaking of stepping back, I just realized we're throwing around record decision like everybody knows what in the world we're talking about here. I've done these interviews enough now that I know what you're talking about. But for those who maybe are just stepping into this or just simply are going, I just want to see a new bridge built. when we say record of decision, what are we talking about?
Well, the record of decision is really, it's kind of the green light from the federal government that says we've looked at, we've identified all the issues that the bridge might bring up, and we've resolved how we're going to address those issues as we go through detailed permitting and that sort of thing and continue to move the bridge along. It's kind of the first step before you get into the more detailed permitting and requirements and that sort of thing. And it details what the bridge authority is committing to do as we develop and build the bridge.
So, I mean, so, you know, because obviously you try to do things concurrently while you're waiting on the federal money decisions. Can you do much permitting work at this point or get permits while you're waiting for all this? Or do you have to get that record of decision and the money in place before you can go through the permitting process?
The record of decision, we need to get that in place
before
we do much detailed permitting. We're in the process of further developing the conceptual design that we've been working with to date. So that will be the next level of detail. And involved in that will be looking at a lot of detailed cost-saving measures as well.
So I know all the congressional offices, they were fairly positive in the discussions, but you know, are they confident that in 2026 you can get the $500+ million?
I that's a fair question. Are they confident? I believe they're confident that they can support our application. What actually comes out of that, I think, is anybody's guess. And even we met with Department of Transportation, and even some of those folks we've been meeting with for 3 years, some folks are new, but they didn't even know what their schedule was going to be for looking at both the 25 and the 26 applications. So they couldn't share a schedule with us. So I think there's a lot of unknowns there.
You know, of course, one of the issues is when things get strung out is it's the old time is money variable. You need to have, if the further thing gets pushed out, usually the more costs go up. We certainly have seen that with this project recently. How cost certain are we right now? And I know that in the money ask and the budgeting for this, I know cushion has been put into it, as it would be with any big project. But if we get pushed out further and further, how confident are we that the costs are going to be relatively stable?
The costs definitely have an impact. If we get into a position where we start to lose the 2027 water window, we're going to have to look at that. But last winter, with our conceptual estimate, we went through a detailed cost analysis and schedule analysis with Kiewit and our third-party cost estimator and Federal Highways. And we actually went through a cost schedule risk analysis, and we balanced out at the 70th percentile of confidence. So I think there's probably something I'm missing in the statistical analysis, but more or less means that there's a 70% chance that we come in under our $1.12 billion mm-hmm. and a 30% chance that we may go over.
Okay. So, which I imagine that's about probably, with any project of this size, about as far as you can go on this sort of thing. Again, given the, you know, right now, the time elements are really kind of the biggest variable you have at this stage, because you've got design coming going on right now. You know, I would think probably it's that question of when the federal dollars come through is going to be what kind of determines where you end up on that scale.
Exactly. And knowing that we have a commitment on those federal dollars then allows us to kick off a number of additional efforts that have money involved, but we're holding off on those until we know that federal money is available.
Mm-hmm. You made the trip to D.C., of course, in mid-September. Are there plans to go back again?
Yes. Generally, what we've been doing for the life of the Bridge Authority mm-hmm. is visiting with our supporters back there about twice a year. Mm-hmm. I don't see any reason that we don't continue to do that. It's just good to be out there in front of mm-hmm. our supporters and being able to make sure that they have the latest information that they can share mm-hmm. as they support our project.
Eric Wilson is with the Hood River Whitesand Bridge Authority on the Bridge Commission. And Eric, thanks for doing this morning. We do appreciate it. We'll be talking about the bridge a lot, I think, in the next few months. Eric, thanks for doing this.
All right. Thank you.
It is 8:25 in the morning on Mid-Columbia today. And when we come back, we'll take a look at what's in the news. Speaking of the federal government, and in the second half of the program, Allison Martin, Washington Department of Natural Resources, is going to be our guest. That's all on Mid-Columbia today, right after this.
Staples presents That Was Easy.
Seems like back to school happens earlier each year.
First day of school coming in hot.
And this year my kids had massive supply lists.
Folders, notebooks, and pens. Oh, the humanity.
But Staples had everything I needed, with some items just 25 cents.
Watch the small print.
No. My back to school budget was saved by Staples Easy Button.
Everything for school, in stock and as low as 25 cents. Staples.
That was easy.
In store, online, and on the app. Ends 9/13 while supplies last.
Progressive knows there's so many great things about being a sports fan. Like scoring the company box seats. How great is that? Trick plays that actually work. Prevent defense when your team is winning by a lot. And even more preventative prevent defense as they're hanging on by a thread. And of course, saving money when you bundle your home and auto with Progressive. That's pretty great. Just like trick plays that actually work.
Yeah, but how often does that happen?
Complaining about sports? Not so great. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Not available in all states or situations.
Hey, I am Brant, and her name is Sherry, and she's a friend and a colleague of mine, and we were just praying for her, actually, because she had a major surgery she just went through.
Yes, and I am very happy about something you actually talk about all the time, which is MediShare. That's right,
of course. Yeah. So what was your experience like with MediShare and your healthcare bills?
You know what? It was seamless, and that's such a blessing when you're already nervous about a health issue, which I was.
Yeah.
Members shared my expenses. There were zero problems, and let me tell you, having people pray with you when you call in and it's just what you need, it's so refreshing.
Yeah, that's what I keep telling people. People love MediShare and saving tons of money. The typical family, I'm fond of saying, can save $500 a month.
I am so thankful for MediShare. It's so different. And I mean different in a very, very good way, Brant.
It is a good different. Call right now. They're so easy to talk to. You can get a price within 2 minutes. Here's the number. Call 888-SHARE-19. That's 888-SHARE-19. 888-SHARE-19.
Coffee for Mid-Columbia Today guests is provided by Hood River Coffee Roasters, the gorgeous local coffee roasters on Tucker Road on the Heights in Hood River.
And it is now 8:28 in the morning. Reminder on this program, the second half of the show, Allison Martin, Washington Department of Natural Resources Service Forestry Coordinator for the Southeast Region. She is going to be with us. And we will talk about the Burdoyne Fire and a recent tour that some officials did that was really looking at how well mitigation efforts helped limit some damage in that area of the fire. Of course, we know there were a number of homes lost to that fire, but how did mitigation efforts do and what worked and the importance of those. So we'll talk to Allison about that coming up in about 5 minutes or so. But first, let's take a look at what is in the news. A federal judge late Sunday temporarily blocked the Trump administration from deploying any National Guard units to Oregon at all after a legal whirlwind that began hours earlier when the president mobilized California troops for Portland after the same judge blocked him from using Oregon's National Guard the day before. During a hastily called evening telephone hearing, U.S. District Judge Karen Immergut granted a temporary restraining order sought by Oregon and California. Immergut, who was appointed by President Donald Trump in his first term, seemed incredulous the president moved to send National Guard troops to Oregon from neighboring California and then from Texas on Sunday, just hours after she had ruled the first time. She cut off a federal government attorney to ask, quote, how could bringing in federalized National Guard from California not be in direct contravention to the temporary restraining order I issued? She said later, quote, aren't defendants simply circumventing my order? And another quote, why is this appropriate? The White House did not immediately comment on the judge's decision. Oregon is fighting to prevent federalized National Guard troops from coming to Oregon and Portland to address ongoing protests at the immigration processing facility in the city. Local officials have pointed out the protest occupies one city block, far from the downtown, in a city that covers 145 square miles. They also say many of President Trump's claims and social media posts appear to rely on images from 2020, when unrest that grew out of the Black Lives Matter protests roiled the city for several months. Trump said federal law enforcement the city then as well. A federal judge has found the Department of Energy broke the law last month when officials attempted to cap the amount of federal funding states could receive to cover the staff and administrative costs of sustainable energy and energy efficiency projects. The Oregon Capitol Chronicle reporting the federal judge Mustafa Kasubai of the U.S. District Court in Oregon sided with Oregon Attorney General Dan Rayfield and 18 other Democratic attorneys general who sued the Department of Energy and its leader Chris Wright in August over attempts to cut funding for such projects. Kasubai found the Trump administration violated the Administrative Procedure Act, violating reimbursement regulations established by the Federal Energy Department. Kasubai gave his ruling from the bench, and no written order has yet been filed with the court. Portland police said they arrested the driver who struck and injured a traffic control worker on I-84 in the Portland area. The driver, identified by police as 20-year-old Gabriel A. Dorton, was charged with assault in the second degree, assault in the third degree, reckless driving, and three counts of reckless endangerment of highway workers. On Thursday, Dorton struck a pedestrian on westbound I-84 at Northeast 148th Avenue a little before 9 in the evening. Police identified the pedestrian as a traffic management contract employee. Dorian then crashed into a barrier and stopped. The worker was transported to the hospital by ambulance with injuries that are life-threatening. Patient's prognosis is unknown. Dorton was not injured. The incident closed down westbound I-84 between Northeast 181st in Gresham and Northeast 148th in Portland, including all the access ramps, catching hundreds of vehicles in a massive backup, according to police. Weather going to be sunny today with some strong east winds, and they get stronger as you go west in the gorge. Highs will be around 70. Currently 50 degrees in Stevenson, 44 in the Dalles, 46 in Hood River. It is 8:32 in the morning.
Ever feel nervous walking into a gun store for the first time? You are not alone.
Hi, I'm not sure where to start. This is my first time here.
Welcome, and don't worry, you're in good hands. Whether you're new to firearms or just looking for information, we're here to help. At Gorge Guns, we understand that buying a firearm is a big decision, especially if it's your first time. Our experienced and friendly staff are here to guide you every step of the way. We offer safety course information, personalized advice, and a welcome environment for all our customers. Feel free to ask any questions you have.
Wow, thank you. This makes me feel so much better.
Visit Gorge Guns today and experience a different kind of gun store, where knowledge, safety, and customer comfort come first.
I felt silly for being nervous, but they were so friendly and really helpful. I felt so comfortable and supported.
Visit Gorge Guns, the best little gun shop in the Gorge, at 1040 Tucker Road in Hood River, or online at gorgeguns.com.
Hello, Klickitat County residents and visitors. We need your help. Our county is over 1,900 square miles. In order to keep the litter and illegal dump sites cleared, we need you to help us find it. Go to the Solid Waste Department homepage to find the litter reporting form at www.klickitatcounty.org. Here at Klickitat County Solid Waste, we are working in cooperation with the Washington State Department of Ecology and would like to say thank you for your support.
At National Geographic Society, we believe in the power of wonder. It drives us to explore, pushes us to see the world differently, moves us to action. And we believe that today, wonder is more essential than ever.
Wow.
That's why we're supporting a new generation of explorers to ask big questions, make breakthroughs, and bring the future closer. Wonder awaits. Will you join us? Visit natgeo.org/wonder.
Mid-Columbia Today is a public affairs program of Bi-Coastal Media Columbia River, 98.3 FM and 1340 AM KIHR and GorgeRadio.com. Now, back to Mark Bailey.
And it is 8:34 in the morning. I'm in Columbia Today. We are now happy to have join us from the Washoe Department of Natural Resources Service Forestry Coordinator for the Southeast Region, Allison Martin. Good morning, Allison.
Good morning. How are you?
All right. How are you doing today?
I'm great. It's a great Monday morning.
It is a very good Monday morning, a nice sunny morning here, which we're going to not have many more of those, I have a feeling, here in the next little while. But, Allison, wanted to have you on because I noticed a story late last week in the Columbian out of Vancouver about, and you were quoted in this story, about state officials taking a tour of the Burdoyne fire area and really kind of looking at mitigation efforts and how effective they were in trying to limit damage from a fire like the Burdoyne fire. Is a tour like that something you normally do?
These are fairly normal. Mm-hmm. It's great for the science aspect of what we do to see how beneficial the work we're actually doing is. Mm-hmm. This year it's a little bit more special though, just because we are trying to restore some of our funding for House Bill 1168 here in Washington. Mm. And so our commissioner is working very hard to show the benefits of wildfire prevention and mitigation efforts, mm-hmm. And how those can actually save us money over, you know, $1 million fire, $1 million a day fire. So
with the Burdoyne fire area, had there been formal mitigation efforts that had taken place? I know that DNR was working with the city of White Salmon slightly to the west on mitigation efforts, but have there been any programs at a governmental level specifically for that area?
So my team and I have been working with individual small forest landowners in the Courtney Road area. I know the Forest Service has been treating some of their land. So there's lots of different government entities working in the area. There's just no large projects from at least my team.
Right.
But we did get to see the benefits of even just a small project on the ground in relation to the Burdoyne fire.
And DNR, like many other fire groups, have been promoting to property owners the need to take defensible space steps now for a long time. We talk about it on this show. It's every year in the springtime and early summer about what's needed to take place. So I'd assume part of what you look at there is were people doing that?
Yeah, we've seen an increase, especially in Klickitat County, in small private forest landowners doing the mitigation work mm-hmm. needed to protect themselves and keep fire lower severity on their properties, mm-hmm. Whether that be through simple land clearing, like removing their brush, trimming their trees up, pruning some thicker tree areas out, or prescribed fire on the ground. Mm-hmm. So
when you took the tour around the Burdoyne fire area, what did you find? What did you see out there as far as success and maybe also things that didn't go as well as you'd like to?
So we toured two landowners' properties that my team and I have been working with. Mm-hmm. Just to the east of these folks were two more landowners who had done work. And then there's a project just to the north of them that we have been planning on doing work in, and that's a smaller community. So that'd be a larger project. What we saw was the fire behavior changed. I wasn't on the fire, but talking to the folks that I know that were present, we have video that shows maybe 8 to 10 minutes from the fire starting to the fire being up at Courtney Road and in that area, which is not a lot of time for landowners to do much, you know, to get out, to just, you know, get themselves out. But what we saw on the ground was trees are already starting to recover. There's green back in the oak trees. Conifers that were trimmed up, they're going to survive. The fire went from torching trees to laying itself back down on the ground and giving firefighters an effort, or like a fighting chance of getting a dozer line in those areas to protect those to the north of them. The fire behavior, I mean, this was the perfect storm of a fire with the high winds, the how fast it moved through the area, and the fact that all the properties to the north of these just four private landowners who have done combined maybe 10 acres of work, it was able to slow the fire, and we actually were able to get a dozer line in. And now there, when you look at the fire map, there's this perfect circle just to the north of them that was untouched by the fire.
Wow. What were some of the key things that those landowners had done? I mean, what was it? I would assume much of it is simply removing burnable fuels in many cases. I assume also it involved would be, I don't know if I know the right term or not, but tree topping or doing things to the trees that are able to, you know, to stop that torching that you described. I know I'm talking to the people who fight these. When you start getting fire going through the tops of trees and jumping from tree to tree, that's the nightmare scenario for those guys.
Yeah, that is one of your higher severity fires, and those burn hotter. They burn much quicker. They are harder to get out, and they're harder to mitigate. And so we're not topping trees, we're pruning trees. So we're not taking tops out of trees, we're pruning them up. So getting those branches, whether they're alive or dead, away from the ground and away from any other fuels on the ground, can help prevent a fire from climbing from the forest floor up into the trees. And the gorge is a very special place when it comes to fighting fire and even doing fuels mitigation work, because we're dealing with a very steep slope. And so we have to take extra caution when assisting landowners and giving them this technical advice to trim their trees.
Mm-hmm.
Because when fire climbs uphill, it can easily heat the fuels above it, drying them out and allowing things above them to catch fire much easier. Pruning trees up at least 10 feet or one third of that tree height is very important. Removing brush from the ground that can act as what we call a ladder fuel, allowing fire to climb into the trees. And then also trying to open up that canopy just a little bit, not much, but trying to prevent fire from being able to jump from tree to tree.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, are there other things that people who live in these kind of areas where they're adjacent to, you know, the forest interface, are there other things people need to be being aware of here?
I mean, we on the Washington side, and I believe on the Oregon side, yeah, too, there are programs that can help with community resilience as well, mm-hmm, because hardening your home is also important, you know, making it a little more resistant to fire and the spreading of fire, mm-hmm, to the home, you know, cleaning out those gutters, replacing any or covering any open spaces with a very thin mesh that will protect them from any embers going into those spaces. You know, making sure that if you're evacuating from a fire, anything that's on your porch that can catch fire is moved inside or thrown away from the home. Mm-hmm. Not stacking our wood close to our homes. There's also building materials that you can use when building a home that are meant to harden your home. So really it starts at your home and moves into your forest.
Yeah.
But when you take all of these efforts, I mean, we've seen people, their home survive these situations. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, again, underscoring the importance of why we've been talking about this for a long time on this show, about, you know, the defensible space need here. And you really brought up the part about with this fire and the Rowena fire across the river, of course, in Oregon,
mm-hmm.
the same deal was the winds were so strong when these fires hit that the reaction time, frankly, just to get people out was all about you could do in some of these cases. So, you know, you've got to take these steps long beforehand. I would think fall offers a chance to do that, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, I am all for, obviously, hardening our homes, giving us that defensible space. And, you know, a landowner that I spoke with after the Burdoyne fire, he sadly did lose his home.
Yeah.
But that 8 to 10 minutes, it wasn't even enough time for those emergency text messages to come out.
Yeah.
By the time he received that, his home was already on fire, and he was trying to get out. He played a huge role in saving his neighbor's home as well. And he had participated in our program, though, so he knew he was fine.
Right.
He knew the rest of his forest was going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And he felt like he had a way out.
Yeah.
The community that we've been working with also took advantage of our community resilience program's micro grant that they offer once a year. So they received $4,000 from that program to redo their road. Before, their road was awful. It was pitted out because of water runoff. It was really inaccessible to firefighters, like fire trucks, really any machine that needed to get in there to help them. But they had that road done this spring before the fire started, and fire trucks were able to get up there. And I think that helped play a role, too, in helping protect those homes.
Now, Courtney, now this gets to the budgetary issue, and right now what DNR is facing to continue those programs. I forget the numbers I saw, but if I remember right, the latest budget from the state of Washington approved from the last legislative session really approved only a fraction of the dollars that have been available before to allow these programs to occur. Is that accurate?
As far as I know, yes.
Yeah, okay. I'm interested to know when you went and talked to these landowners, the group that went there, were there any legislators who took part in that?
There were no legislators, but we were lucky enough to have our Commissioner of Public Lands on site.
Yeah.
And some city officials
okay.
as well, city white salmon officials.
Now, if people are interested in getting help, on the Washington side, obviously, here we're talking to Allison Martin from Washington Department of Natural Resources. If people are interested in trying to get some help, or it may just be as simple as just some advice as far as what do I need to think about to protect my forest land and protect my home, living in the wild land interface, from catastrophic fire and the things they can do to harden them, who should they contact?
So my team is, so the Service Forestry team is there to assist with any of your forest questions. We have what's called the Landowner Assistance Portal or the Find Your Forester tool. You can just Google DNR Find Your Forester tool. You enter your address and it pulls up an entire list of different landowner programs that are available and will give you the phone number for the forester in your area. So I highly suggest using that. The service foresters for the West Klickitat area are Sharon Frazee and Tylee Blowers. Great, great women, very smart. And I highly suggest reaching out to them. If you're on the East Klickitat side, we also have Dustin Munch. So I have three foresters available. I myself also like to come down and get out in the field, so you are always welcome to call me. Mm-hmm. And then if you're interested in more of the defensible space home hardening aspect, Charlie Landsman is your guy.
Mm-hmm. Allison Martin's been with us, Washington Department of Natural Resources. Allison, thanks for doing this morning. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having us. And you know, I'm always happy to offer technical advice when it comes to protecting your homes.
It is 8:49 in the morning, 8:49 in the MCT, and we will come back and wrap things up for you, or start wrapping them up anyway, right after this.
If you have unfiled taxes or are in debt to the IRS, this is important news. Did you know the IRS has programs specifically designed to help people struggling with tax debt? Powerful tax assistance programs that can save you thousands if you qualify. No one knows these programs better than the experts at Optima Tax Relief, America's most trusted tax resolution firm, A-rated by the Better Business Bureau. Their award-winning team of tax attorneys and licensed professionals have resolved over $1 billion of tax debt for their clients. One call to Optima can start the process, helping to end your worries about wage garnishment, asset seizure, and other IRS actions. Make sure you're getting the best options to solve your tax problems. Call the experts at Optima today for a free confidential consultation.
Call 800-707-4522. 800-707-4522. 800-707-4522.
Optima Tax Relief.
Some restrictions apply. For complete details, please visit OptimaTaxRelief.com.
Did you know Skyline Health and White Salmon has its very own sports medicine doc superstar? That's right. Dr. Ryan Petering trained at OHSU, cared for professional Nike athletes, and even spent more than 15 years teaching other doctors how it's done. From sporting injuries to arthritis, he's here to help you move better, feel stronger, and keep doing the things you love. Want to live life to its fullest? Step right up and visit MySkylineHealth.org. Skyline Health, world-class care right here at home.
Chronic absenteeism is on the rise.
Sophia A, absent.
Julio M, absent.
These absences are often due to the absence of crucial needs, like food, transportation, and health care.
Olivia H, absent.
Preston L, absent.
But site coordinators from communities and schools connect kids to the resources they need so they show up prepared and ready to learn.
Jacob O,
present.
Visit communitiesandschools.org. Being present matters.
Coffee for Mid-Columbia Today guests is provided by Hood River Coffee Roasters, the gorgeous local coffee roasters on Tucker Road on the Heights in Hood River.
It is 8:51 in the morning on Mid-Columbia Today. And I will get on the soapbox here slightly and point out that, you know, the programs we just talked about with Allison from DNR, these sort of programs, these are not the things that should get budget cut, okay? The more of the mitigation programs and the more of the preventative that you do, the real money that you start to have to throw around comes when you have to fight these horrible fires. And there's always going to be. I mean, there's only so far you can go. But, you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, if you've ever heard that saying. I may be dating myself. Maybe nobody uses this anymore. But that's where this falls in. A few dollars of investment can save us some money down the road here. And save people's lands, save people's homes, you know, things like that. Hopefully make insurers feel better about insuring homes in areas that are in high fire danger, because that's an issue. Yeah, I mean, it's just so vital that these things happen. It's just vital that work's allowed to continue. And you just find the money for it. I don't care. Just find it. It's in the terms of government, it's not that much. Okay. I will back away now and stop on that one. Couple things going on. Mid-Columbia Community Concerts Association presents Xhaka, international award-winning clarinet and guitar duo, fusing classical and world music. And that'll be at 7 o'clock tomorrow evening at the Dallas Civic Auditorium. Tickets are available at MidColumbiaCommunityConcerts.com. On Wednesday, our friend Sarah Fox, Sense of Place Season 16, going to continue, be the start of the season. Woven in Place, A Rancher's Journey from Sheep to Fashion in the Olympics with Jeannie Carver from Imperial Ranch. And that is going to be at 7 o'clock in the evening at the Columbia Center for the Arts in Hood River Wednesday evening. Tickets available. Check to see if they still have them. If not, you can take the live stream in. senseofplacegorge.org is where you can find out if they still have tickets left. They still have them when she was here last week. But I won't guarantee you they're still there now. And, of course, you can check out they've got a monthly event going on into the springtime. So you can check that out. Yes, Youth Empowerment Shelter. They've got their fall soiree. Hope starts here. Thursday evening, 6 to 8, the Dallas Civic Auditorium. Food, silent auction, music by Matthew McCravey. Tickets $25, available at yesshelter.org. So you can help out a good cause there and enjoy yourself. Also, Hood River Valley Harvest Festival is going to be this weekend, starting Friday. Hood River Waterfront Events site. Go to visithoodriver.com and get all the information as far as what is going on with that. Don't have a ton of things here going on. Not like last week. You know, last Saturday, there were just all sorts of fundraisers, et cetera, going on. Then again, I may look today, find some more stuff on the internet, my email, and turns out there may be a lot more than I realize. And we'll tell you about them if that is the case. It is 8:55. We'll come back and wrap it up, tell you who's coming tomorrow right after this.
When I found out my son was using marijuana, I thought it was just part of adolescence.
Lots of teens and young people get high.
But then I found out how powerful today's concentrates are.
I couldn't believe it.
It's far more powerful than weed from the 70s, 80s, and 90s.
When teens use vapes or dabs, the potency can be 80 to 100% THC.
THC can cause addiction, hallucinations, paranoia, anxiety, and cannabis-induced psychosis in youth.
For teens and young adults, marijuana use comes with increased risks
of suicidal thoughts, planning, and attempts.
And these high THC products can be bought almost anywhere,
from gas stations to dispensaries. I had no idea.
Talk to your children well before they experiment with today's potent THC products.
Get educated.
Help them understand the dangers are real.
Just say no, K-N-O-W. Go to justsayno.org today for the facts.
A public service message from Johnny's Ambassadors.
Tune in weekday mornings at 8:05 and keep up with community events and issues with the Mid-Columbia Today Show on Mid-Columbia's News Leaders, 98.3 FM and 1340 AM KIHR.
Tomorrow on MCT, Kim Vogel is going to be here. We're going to talk about the Harvest Quilt Show that's coming up on the weekend. Part of all the Harvest Festival activities, Hood River Valley. We'll talk about that quilt show, what they've got planned. And Debbie Jones from Youth Think should be with us tomorrow as well. Wednesday, Hood River County Health Department. Thursday, Providence Hood River. I know we've got a doctor on. I just can't remember who it is. And Friday, we talk Columbia Gorge Discovery Center. Of course, they're rolling now. They had their big fundraiser last week. The big, what do they call it? I forget what they called it. But it was a soiree like we just used a few minutes ago. Soiree, that just adds an element of class, doesn't it? But anyway, that's what's coming up on the show this week. We'll have a few other things as well as I schedule them, as I look for them. Well, it'll be a big football weekend this weekend on our stations, by the way. Friday night, KIHR, Hood River Valley unbeaten, Milwaukee unbeaten. Well, the game from Milwaukee, 6:30 pregame, kickoff at 7 o'clock. A big game in Oregon Class 5A football. And on Saturday, Oregon fell to 3 in the AP poll, still 2 in the coaches poll. That part doesn't really matter that much. And they'll be hosting number 7 Indiana, speaking of unbeatens here. And that'll be at 10:30 in the morning of the pregame, 12:30 kickoff from Eugene. And that will be on our sister station, Classic Rock 92.7, 102.9 KMSW. So a big weekend ahead. Mariners split, got the win on Sunday against Derek Skubal, which gets even back at a game apiece. I think that series is going to be low scoring and back and forth all the way through. But now they go to Detroit. Tomorrow and Wednesday they'll play. No, tomorrow I think it's an afternoon game, like 1 o'clock Pacific time. And if they have a Game 5 necessary, it will be on Friday in Seattle. I knew somebody was going to the Seahawk Buccaneer game yesterday. I wonder how things were around that neighborhood when you've got an NFL game at 1 o'clock and the baseball playoff game at 5 o'clock. Obviously, you have about 70,000 at the football game. You got about 50,000 at the baseball game. That's a lot of people And there's not a lot of parking around there if you haven't been there before. Then you got the train station, everything else. I have a feeling the TV was the best place to be to take all that in. I thought it worked out anyway. Well, I'm done. For Cameron Eisenberg producing, I'm Mark Bailey. Talk to you again on Tuesday.
Columbia Today Show is a public affairs presentation of Bi-Coastal Media Columbia River. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the station, parent company, or of the sponsors. We welcome your suggestions for future shows. Call us at 541-386-1511. If you've missed any of today's show, go online to GorgeRadio.com and click on Local On Demand for our podcast version. Thank you for listening to Mid-Columbia Today.
Today's Country, KI.